Welcome to the TV Kids Summer Festival. I'm Kristen Brzezinski, Executive Editor of TV Kids. And today we're looking at how companies are elevating their animation pipelines. And I have with me Cyber Group Studios' Raphael Mathieu, Sinking Ship Entertainment's Matt Bishop, and Toon to Tango's Uli Stoff. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Great to have this group with us. To start things off, what is driving this push for innovation in animation? Is it the industry, the audience, a need for greater efficiencies, or just a natural progression with technology to elevate?
It's a bit of all of that. I think we in our industry, we're here to create, to innovate, of course, editorially speaking, and naturally, when new stories come up and you want to tell it the best way possible, you need to have your tools enabling you to do it. So in the case of Cyber Group, for example, I mean, it really came out of necessity. First of all, it has always been in our DNA. We're not a tech company, so we do not invent software, but each time we try to implement them, those existing. So let me give you an example. One of the very first time I remember is when we were working on Tatanka, and we had our team trying to find a way to have, you know, the hair of the wolf being shinier and much shinier than the actually software enabled us to do it. So this is how we went to do some R&D in that direction, more specifically. A bit later, it was for Zorro. We had a lot of characters, a huge crowd. And again, once more, how are you going to make it work without killing your budget? Obviously, we all know that more character rise the budget. So it was an issue for us on this point. And there again, the R&D team worked on that and helped us to find smart way to work in a better way. And the last thing, if I may add, for us has been really the most recent one and the most, I would say, opportunistic one because of COVID, actually. What happened is before COVID, we worked on our very first video game on Gigantosaurus. And at this moment, we started to use the Unreal Engine. And during COVID, the team was like very excited about this new engine that we were not familiar with and started to have some time to really focus on using it and adapting it. And this is where we started to work on this engine, have the time and try to make test and learn, and now having structured a strategy around that. So again, it all depends on so many factors that I would answer all the opportunities in your questions could match the need to do so.
To build on that, I think there's so many great points there. I think what's really exciting is the rise of all the OTT players, because back in the day, you used to have feature animation and you used to have television animation, and never the two shall meet. And now when you log on to any of your favorite streamers, you'll see a feature film right next to a television series. And I kind of correlate this a bit to the live action space. If you look at live action television 15, 20 years ago, there was a giant gap between a feature and a TV. And you could clearly look at something and be like, that's TV, that's a feature. And right now, I think we're kind of at the precipice where you're now looking at animation in the same light. You're starting to see things that look like a feature animation, but it's actually television. And I think as things continue to advance, that gap is going to shorten and shorten and shorten, and the quality is going to increase. And I always like to view future technologies like newer paintbrushes, newer ways of painting. And every single time, it just gets better and better. And then I think what I'm really looking forward to is now with the birth of real time, I think it's going to become a better eraser. I think it's going to allow people to be more flexible and faster, but actually just give them more creative options. And I think now when you can watch a television series and a feature that gap is going to be more necessary for the audience and kind of, you know, finding a way to tell greater visual stories. And at Sinking Ship, that's what we're really excited about, is how do we tell a story as big as possible in a cost-effective manner? And the reality is on a TV timeline, which is, we all know, very different than a feature. So for us, the audience is kind of driving it, but it excites us because it allows us to tell stories that weren't possible years ago.
I agree with both of you. No surprise. I think on top of that, we are all pushed into create more innovation in a way by the market itself. I mean, we all know that quite some money has been taken away from the market. So at the moment, budgets are a little bit more tight. So we have to be really innovative and cost effective also in order to produce great shows with the utmost creativity. But at the same time, probably in the near future, for less money. So that alone, that almost cries for innovation all the way through. And if we look at platforms, at the AVOD platforms, for example, what our consumers are watching, I mean, they are, I know we come to that probably later, but I mean, they are looking at great stories. Do they necessarily look at the best possible picture itself or not? How do we find the right balance between the money availability of money and the technical aspects? And of course, game engines can play a role in all of that. Is that at the moment the answer already? And is it fully being developed into a business model which has been driven by innovation? I'm not sure about, to be honest. So I think the strive for innovation in our kids industry has always been big. And in a way, we are a little bit the front runners for many other parts of the business, whether it's the feature film business or drama side or whatever. And innovation has always been there and is more required today, I think, than ever before because of the current market situation itself.
Let's talk about some of the new techniques being used in your own productions and what they lend to the overall look, feel, budget, timeline, what they bring to those projects.
Sinking Ship's kind of an interesting way to approach it, because even though we've been making kids and family content for the last 19 years, we're relatively new to the animation space. Our bread and butter for the longest time was live action and visual effects shows all done in-house. And that was more of a traditional VFX pipeline. So we were able to take kind of a fresh approach to animation for our most recent television series and also for our first feature that's coming out this year. So when we approached animation, we looked at our VFX pipeline, which is a Maya Houdini-based setup. But we realized that as things were progressing, there was a massive move towards real time. So we actually decided a couple of years ago to really double down with Epic and invest in building out an entire real time pipeline for our first series, Build-A-Brother Dream Factory, that just launched a month ago. And it was really exciting to build something entirely in a real time engine. We still do our animation in Maya, to be fair, at this current time, but that's something we're currently evaluating. But it was really important for us to come up with a way that we could actually adapt a lot of our live action mentality into production, which I know sounds weird, but the nice thing with working in real time is it's very similar to how we do location scouts. We can walk through our town, we can bring people in. You know, when we're doing our pre-light, which is just like what we do on set, we do it the exact same way in animation. We pre-light the scene in blocking. So we see how the shadows are going to go, and we really try to make it very dynamic. But then the animators are then seeing the lighting in their animation, which doesn't exist in a traditional pipeline. And so it takes a lot of the pre-production that you would have in live action and moves it to the front. So the pipeline kind of flips, which is exciting. And then just because we're crazy, we like to... at the exact same time, we've also been making a massive move into USD, or Universal Scene Description. So this is technology that Pixar and the geniuses there created and then open sourced it for the community. And what we realized is that our traditional pipeline couldn't handle the feature side of things. So we had to double down on USD. And I think long-term USD is going to absolutely revolutionize both collaboration and also kind of hopefully give a competitive advantage for the studios that are running it, because it's so much faster. It's so much more efficient. We can move between softwares incredibly quickly. And so it also allows us that when we approach a project, we can go with the benefits and the speed of an Unreal pipeline for maybe television and previs, and then using USD for robust rendering and high quality fidelity. So those are the two avenues that we've really chosen to move down.
To complement what you're saying, Matt, on our side as well in Cyber Group Studios, I mean, the shift to the Unreal Engine and real-time animation has been a game changer. It doesn't mean that we're not using the traditional pipes. I mean, they're going to be there for a long time, and they should be. But the use is still very different, complementary. And what is great is that it gives us more possibilities, more flexibility, and more ability to speak in a language that is appropriate to the content or to the cost-effective need of creating content with the budget that are, you're absolutely right, Ulrich, are getting smaller, or the need to create content that is digital native. So obviously, the financing for that type of content is not necessarily the same, and we have to be creative. So using the Unreal Engine for us, I mean, we chose Unreal because we met the people at Epic and there were great discussions. They have been extremely great support. We were the proud beneficiary in Europe of Epic Mega Grant, which has been a great reward and helped us to go into new genres. As well, we started to use it, for example, creating new companions content for our hit series, Gigantosaurus. That was the first time we hit it to create the Giganto Club and to have a companion that would be digital native to help to support the brand and the show at the same time. So that has been very strategic. That was the first one. And then mastering this tool has enabled us as well to work on something like completely different to what we were doing originally, since we have been working with on a show that is everything but for kids, because we've been picked to do a series, digital native, on The Walking Dead. And obviously that's not really kids content, but that was animated content for Meta. We won a contest, if I can say so. Sorry, my English is like terrible, so I apologize if the world is not really appropriate. But Skybound and Genvid picked us up. I know there was a big crowd that wanted to work on the show. Super exciting, and we were the only one to be picked up. And the thing was that we were using Unreal, they were using Unity, and we find way to connect the two softwares together and to go from one universe to the other, and did what you've been doing for many years, actually, Matt, live action, or not live action, but live animation, almost live, because each week with this mile, we would have to create a new episode based on the choice of the viewers on Meta. And I have to say, this has been, first of all, we didn't sleep for a few months. Second of all, we learned so much. I mean, our life has been miserable, but the tremendous step we made is like completely huge, and it opened new opportunities for, I don't know, I mean, many things we're discussing right now that probably a couple of years ago we wouldn't even think about that. So it's great, and it's like super, super exciting.
I guess we are all doing pretty much the same. So sure. Innovation is coming from every end of our industry. I think on top, of course, comes now AI technical stuff, you know, ChatGPT, and then we are all trying at the same time to to play around more with it than using it. So far, we are integrating it in some of the development work, as many of our colleagues does. And there it really, we can see some not perfect, but some good results, which help us maybe in the near future to bring down some of the development costs for new shows. And then we have to add on all the Unreal Engine stuff and everything. We are trying really to mix everything, and then especially for our hybrid shows where we are mixing up live action and CG animation, it's very useful to use these techniques. And I hope is that right if I say the boundaries, you know, where it stops sometimes, yeah, is not so much the willingness for innovation in our industry. It's more the bias and the editorial teams of some of our partners which are blocking innovation, you know. That's they see it still, that's what we find at least, sometimes from the very old perspective, these editors, if we come up with something new, which is new in terms of visual and storytelling and formatting, you know, then innovation still sometimes, unfortunately, is stopped by our partners more than by the producers and studios itself.
So what I'm hearing here is the same way that real time has done so well in the gaming world, it does seem like there's quite a bit of potential for this style of rendering with animated series as well.
I told you earlier that Cybergrid was launching companion content made for digital firsthand on Giganto. So that was the first step where we're trying to learn step by step. And now, obviously, the big challenge and the great interest is how you can implement this technology, this incredible tool, on more traditional animation and make it like completely non-traditional and innovative. I'm kind of proud to say that we're using it for the first time in a very ambitious show called Alex Player. And Alex Player it's interesting as well. Actually, it was a natural born real-time animation because the story takes place into the esports game and the esports event. So it was a natural. And we're using it for so many different things that gives us fluidity. Because to me, I think one of the great assets of real-time animation, including sometimes when you can implement it as well, motion capture. You don't necessarily have to use both at the same time, but when you can, I mean, the fluidity you get is like completely crazy. And for us on Alex Player that we're doing with France Télévisions and RAI, it really gave us a liberty to talk about and to animate the video game in the animated series with the liberty and a quality that frankly is completely stunning. So it's a great tool. Then again, we're learning, but the first results that we've starting to show to our partners, I mean, everyone is like completely breathtaking, including us. So that's extremely promising for what we're going to be able to do as well for other type of series, whether they are CGI with a 3D look or maybe in a look that will be different, maybe more 2D-ish or 2D. So I think right now it's just the beginning and we'll have to work on the way to adapt it to our creative and editorial needs.
And to build on that too, I find it was a very funny year for us because at the exact same time we were doing our first real-time series, we would also have tech meetings with our USD feature team. And our USD series, which has over 55 full CG characters, full claw simulation, full hair simulation, 11-minute episodes, we'd be rendering that in about 12 minutes, not for a frame, but for an 11-minute episode. And then we would jump to our feature pipeline, and then one frame, not an episode, would be 11 to 12 hours. So it's a massive difference. And for me, what I get excited about is at Sinking Ship, we always like to take a strong environmental message towards all our shows. And the power difference is astonishing. So our render farm, which handles all of our high-end Maya and Houdini rendering, consumes a lot of power. But we're talking about rendering a real multiple a character episode with cloth simulation, hair simulation in 11 to 12 minutes. So the power saving is massive. The network is thrilled. And the visual quality is really high. So I think the one thing that doesn't often get the same level is that the environmental impact of moving away from render farms to high-end GPU rendering driven by a real-time engine is going to be massive. And right now we've been through that. And I'm excited to continue to move more towards our feature pipeline, moving more towards real-time. But right now there is a difference in fidelity, but still I think the quality is super high.
I agree. The quality level is something totally different now compared to 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, you cannot compare it anymore. We are not that far as my two colleagues are at the moment. We are experimenting more for the internet side and AVOD side of our business with it at the moment. So we are going relatively traditional in order to get it 100% right when we adapt it for a television show. And I hope that with our studio partners, we will be able to see the same positive effects as Matt, for example, sees within the coming months. But we are pretty far down the line also. And but we have to test a little bit more on our side at the moment with it.
Yes, we are seeing some fantastic and stunning animations out there. But then there's also some really low quality, almost rudimentary content on, let's say, YouTube that can catch like wildfire. What are your thoughts on this? Is it ever potentially even a bit frustrating to see so much money and time poured into this gorgeous piece of well-crafted animation and then see some sort of generic or low-budget piece just take off?
I see it. We are not frustrated at all, to be honest. I think it's a learning curve, and it's a very positive. We see many positive effects, which we can leverage into our productions by doing that. I mean, certainly for everybody is one lesson is that not always the best possible animated picture automatically has the biggest fan base. It's a combination of things, and the story is so. I mean, when you see what the kids are doing on Google or on TikTok or whatever, you know, and what the people are doing there, I mean, it tells us a clear message that we have to really create very deep stories which relate to the kids and not to us and our fantasy. I think we even have to dive deeper than we sometimes did, honestly speaking. And you see so many shows out there in the market which have been produced well. They are looking stunning, but they are so distant from really our core demographic. And that is frustrating to me personally, because especially when you see those shows which are partially financed by government funding, subsidies, tax credits, tax breaks, whatever, you know, they fill the pipeline to the platforms or to the broadcasts or whatever with these shows which will never succeed, because they simply don't hit the heart of our core demographic. That's our main problem.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Ulrich. We are in an industry where we create emotions. We can get to kids only if we talk to them the right way. So the story, and not only the story, but the whole aspect of a show, whatever it may be, has to lead to feeling something. And in that aspect, we do have a responsibility, because when you're doing live action for adults, you can do whatever you want. It's for adults. They're grown up. They can live with it and they can deal with it. When you're talking to kids and you're actually appealing to their emotion, it has a meaning. So going back to your original question, Christine, yes, it can be a bit frustrating from time to time on my side to see a show that I would say visually is not so great having a great success. But I would, the first question I would ask myself is, well, they got it right on so many other level that maybe we can learn from it, and we have to do better as well. Something as well that is different now is the agility and the reactivity we need to be on. And I think we're at a moment in our industry where there are really two different ways to work that will coexist. But the first one is the traditional one. That takes a lot of time, and we will be able to reduce it at some point. Eventually, it has always been, it has always started a bit. But the reality, if you want to do great quality visually at the service of amazing stories, appealing to the hearts and the emotion of kids and grownups, it will take time. On the other side, you have the digital space where you can experience another language, where you can experience another type of storytelling, and they can complement each other. And we're newbies in the second area, and there are some people who've been there for longer than us. And that's the challenge. And that's the challenge that we've really taken like that, having a great team in internally. And that's good to be challenged, because when you're challenged, I mean, you make wonders eventually. So again, that's just the way it should be. You know, you have to do with changes. You have to embrace changes. If you don't, you're dead. So hopefully we're going to grow up, we're going to evolve, and we're going to make it work.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting that we live in a time where broadcast is kind of becoming democratized. You know, when we started the company, you didn't have very many players to go to. And now you can have a platform like YouTube or TikTok where you can get 10 times the views of the Super Bowl and any sort of event like that. And I think what's really exciting is that it really boils down to story. And if you're telling a good quality story and you're connecting with your audience, like my colleagues here have said, there's so much to learn from that. And so at the end of the day, you can look back, you can look kind of past bad quality if there's a good story, but you can't look past a bad story if the quality is good. It won't connect with the audience. So I really think it's exciting that these platforms exist, because some of these shows would never see the light of day 10 years ago because there would be no audience for it. And I think it's only going to continue to grow, especially as we talked about before with AI and how you're going to be able to rapidly prototype things quicker. I think we're going to see more and more of this content, and we're going to see what connects and what doesn't. And then people are going to, you know, take from that what they will. But at the end of the day, the number one thing is story. And I think these things, these other projects are really clearly showing that they connect with the audience. They tell the story they want to hear.
If we all look back at the history of animation, it has always been that way, to be honest.
Exactly.
Because if you look at the old traditional Japanese animation, exactly. Yeah, where they produced episodes for, let's say, $50,000 in half an hour episode, I mean, the animation itself was really, really limited. But the storytelling was so fantastic, was so great that the people accepted it. And anime today, I mean, you cannot take it away from the market anymore, okay? Because people got used to it. So what does it tell us? You know, I think we've got to exactly what Rafael said. We've got to get better in every discipline. And I think the so-called cheaper animations, which are having great success, which could lead to frustration, should motivate us to really find a formula which enables us to produce at high quality, stunning pictures, fantastic stories, and exactly what Matt said. I mean, story has to come first, because we can never repair that part. Huh? It's too late when it's in a picture. What we do, for example, is also with limited animations, is we test new IPs in a very broad way. And is it going directly into a television show or into a feature film? It's not a cheap way. I mean, that's a terrible, expensive way to come up with a new IP or an original content IP. Yeah, why not testing it in a much cheaper way on YouTube or TikTok or whatever? And we go that way, and we see great results. We are sometimes surprised by ourselves with our own stuff we are doing there, because there's some completely crazy stuff or influenced stuff by kids. And I think it's really rewarding to our business.
Oh, I love what I'm hearing here, which is that it's the kids that are top of mind and delivering them great stories with a bit of boundary pushing animation that can either help with efficiencies or timelines. That marriage really makes me encouraged about all that's to come in the animation business. So thank you all for taking the time to chat this out with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kristin. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. It was a great pleasure.